What's up, Boston sports fans? Welcome to episode 47, the Tory Krug episode, if you will. Another action-packed episode bringing to you guys. We got Colin Beswick. He's a staff writer for SB Nation and the Stanley Cup of Chowder. He's going to talk about the Tavares situation, you know, some off-season moves that he would like to see, you know, some that he realistically would see. Also going to talk about prospects coming up through the system. Then we got Sam Sheehan. He's a Celtics blog writer and co-host of Celtics Roundtable on CLNS Media. He's going to talk about the Celtics draft pick and what else he sees them doing this offseason. And Chris and I are going to talk about the Red Sox and if they should actually trade Jackie Bradley Jr. now that he's hitting. Also touch on some injuries in the rotation. And then tap it all off with Patriots training camp news. Got a little announcement as well. As of this week, our podcast is going to be available on Full Press Radio and the 12-ounce Sports Radio Network. So definitely go check those guys out. They're both on Twitter. They both have websites. It's fullpresscoverage.com, and then also 12ozsportsradio.com. So as far as the scheduling, you know, on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., you'll be able to hear that on 12 Ounce. That's pretty cool, pretty exciting stuff for the podcast. You can also find it on iTunes, anchor.fm. Pretty much anywhere that you can find a podcast, we're at. So here we go. We got Colin Beswick joining us. How's it going tonight, Colin?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good. So let's jump right into it. A lot of Bruins stuff going on. We'll just start firing questions, and if whatever you want to add to it, feel free. What do you think is the most important upgrade going into this offseason?
It was a topic of the week, it seems like.
Right.
I know a lot of people are talking about adding that second line scoring winger, whether it was Kovalchuk or bringing back Rick Nash. And now it's obviously the big news is John Tavares as a free agent. That's probably the easy answer, but I'll go a little bit off the board with that and say I don't think that a lot of the options being tossed around are reasonable or likely, I should say. So if I'm looking in-house in ways that the team can upgrade, I actually look at Tuukka Rask. I gotta start by saying I'm not a Tuukka Rask hater, anything like that. I know that people are generally on one side or the other, but the fact is he had a pretty average year last year. He was a little bit slightly above league average in terms of his save percentage and goals against. And if they're looking at ways where the team can be better or improve going into next year, if he has a bounce back season, that would go a long way towards the Bruins getting farther into the playoffs.
Excellent. Who are some players you would like to see brought in this year through the free agent class, if possible?
So this is a big topic. Everyone's excited about it. I've been pretty vocal in saying I didn't want Ilya Kovalchuk. I thought there was too much risk there. Rick Nash, I think, is a fine player, and if they can get him for a one-year deal, even if it's a high dollar amount, I still think he's effective and he can fit in and do well. But looking outside of that, there really isn't a ton of reasonable options for the Bruins to bring in, especially as a scoring winger. I wrote an article about it. But one of the names that I found interesting was James Neal, which Bruins fans hear that name and they don't want anything to do with it given its history. And he's obviously not the easiest guy to root for, and I'll be the first to admit that. But he is a unrestricted free agent coming off a pretty strong year out in Vegas. He has mentioned that he wants to sign back in Vegas, but I mean, you cover the league or you follow the league long enough, you know that pretty much every player is going to say that no matter what the situation is. And as of now, there hasn't been any movement on him signing anywhere. So if they could get him on a 3 or maybe even a 4 year deal, he's someone I would look at as you know, bringing in to be a scoring touch. I think he falls out of the conversation at times, but he's actually one of the most consistent scorers the league has. Scored 20 or more goals in all 10 of his seasons in the NHL. Question with him is, if he doesn't re-sign with the Golden Knights, how much is he going to cost? And he may very well, you know, price himself out of the Bruins budget. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think I was with you on Kovalchuk. He's been out of the league for so long, and you know, giving him that third year at age 35 didn't really seem like a good move. It seemed to come with a lot of risk. I mean, who knows what you're really going to get with him? Rick Nash too. 1 year. Is he playing? I thought I heard recently that he was talking about retiring.
Yeah, I tweeted that out the other day, but he mentioned it when the Bruins were eliminated that he was, you know, he was considering it. He's a guy who's had, you know, a handful of concussions over his career that we know about.
Hmm.
And I mentioned, too, in terms of career earnings, he's right up near the top of active NHL players in terms of what he's earned over his career. So if he does decide to call it quits, I mean, you know, I mentioned it before, but you can't really be upset about that, especially with everything we know about, you know, the CTE and traumatic brain injuries and everything going on. But like I said, if he's coming back and you can get him cheap, you know, it may be worth it. You know, if I'm going off the board, the name that I really want to happen, but I don't think will ever happen, is actually Nino Niederreiter out of Minnesota. A few people have reported, including Russo from The Athletic, that Minnesota is looking to package him with Tyler Ennis in a salary dump. And he would be a legit first line winger or second line winger. He's young, on an affordable deal. The thing is, you'd have to be able to convince Minnesota to take Backes and probably some young players in that deal. And as we know, Backes has his no movement clause. Would he waive it to go home to Minnesota? He may. I don't know if Minnesota wants to take on more salary for an aging player. But that's my dream scenario, is getting that young scoring winger they can lock up for a long time and spread out the depth on the first and second lines.
Decent. Far away, Thompson.
But do you think the odds of Riley Nash coming back?
So I love Riley Nash. I'm pretty upfront about that. He obviously had a great year here in Boston, career year. I told the story a few times, but the first question I ever asked Bruce Cassidy was, you know, if he thought that Rick Nash could produce more offense if he was being underutilized, you know, questions along those lines. And he basically said, yeah, that with a player like Nash, he thinks the game from a defensive standpoint, and the offense was almost an afterthought to him. And then this year, he changed his approach a little bit and obviously had a career year. So I said, I'm a huge fan of him. He has value up and down your lineup. He filled in first line, could be third line, fourth line, whatever it may be. But it's a double-edged sword, because as much as you want him back, someone is going to give him more than the Bruins can afford. The name that gets tossed around with him is, you know, the Chris Kelly comparison. It's a good comparison, but it's not perfect. When you look at percentage of cap hit, Chris Kelly was making quite a bit more than I think Nash will make in terms of, you know, today's dollars. But he's a player, as much as I like him, I don't want the Bruins overextending themselves, you know, for a guy who was basically a career 30-point player before this year. So I know the rumors, you know, out there. I'm not a big rumor guy, but supposedly Vancouver is very interested. Jim Benning out in Vancouver supposedly is intrigued by him. I think he's going to get a 3-4 year deal somewhere for, you know, $3 or $4 million a year. If he does, best of luck to him. Great guy. I just don't see the Bruins being able to, or being willing to, give that much money to what they probably see as a third line player.
Yeah, I like Riley Nash a lot too. I thought he had a great year overall, but who's a free agent that no one's talking about that you could potentially see ending up on the Bruins?
So the one that I mentioned earlier was James Neal. So
Neal, yeah.
Go in on that, but two names that I actually wrote about in the article about James Neal was actually everyone's favorite Bruins killer, Thomas Vanek. Is this the year they finally sign him?
Right.
And the other name is Michael Grabner. who I'm not as big a fan of. You know, Mark Diver from the Providence, I mentioned the Bruins are interested in him earlier today, and I wouldn't be surprised. But to me, Grabner is really a third-line player at best. I don't know if he really moves the needle. So if the Bruins are looking to get a little bit of a scoring touch and not just rely on their young players, I could see them going after Vanek on a 1 or 2 year deal for cheap. Seems like he's been rumored to be coming to the Bruins for the last half decade. Might be the year they actually sign him. So that'll be interesting.
Well, they ought to just sign him and just put him in the seats for that way they don't come back and haunt him all the time. Boy, yep, he's a wicked Bruins kill. It's crazy. I don't mind Vanek. I mean, how much do you think realistically he could bring and his age in at this point?
He's an interesting one because he's obviously bounced around the league seemingly every year. So I think if he gets a deal for more than a year, it's going to be 2 years. In terms of how much per year, he's obviously going to be well below your Neils or your Stasny's or anyone like that. It's tough to say. I would think, you're looking at $3 or $4 million maybe per year for someone like him, maybe even less. I don't know what the market is for him. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands. But like I said, he doesn't stick around with teams for very long. So
it's pretty much become almost like a journeyman at this point.
Pretty much. I mean, he's still effective. You know, he still can score. As we all know, he's not exactly a well-rounded player. But he can definitely score. If that's all they're looking for, he might be a veteran they bring in to score for them.
Yeah, it might not be a bad idea. A Thompson?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, what player in Providence do you think has the best chance to crack the big club this year?
All right, so I got to pump one of the players I enjoy watching the most tires a little bit. And for me, it might be a little bit of wishful thinking, but I'd really love to see Solaric get some nice time up with the big club. You know, he's had a little bit of game time here and there, but he's a guy who's just always sort of jumped out at me. You know, I think he has 4 points and I think 10 games off the top of my head at the NHL level, which doesn't scream anything special to you. But, you know, the more we learn about the NHL, the more we realize that opportunity has a lot to do with, you know, production when it comes to the young players. If you're putting them on the fourth line, you can't really expect them, you know, to put up high point totals. You know, he's got some decent size. He's got some speed. You know, he's got good hands. You know, I think if you give him the right opportunity, you know, if you put him next to Krejci, you may be surprised at just how skilled he turns out to be. I mean, injuries have been a big story with him. So obviously he has to stay healthy, but he's who I'm really pulling for in terms of who I think the most logical player to see ice time at the NHL level is probably JFK. I know that the organization is really high on him. They've taken their time developing him so he can learn the pro game, you know, in all three areas. But I would be pretty surprised if he is in one of the very first call-ups if they need a forward or if particularly a center if someone goes down or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I like him as a player, too. So now we get to – what's that?
It's always tough with young players to project who they are, even the people who are real experts. You know, it's tough to say. You know, I know, like I said, the organization's high on him. You know, I think he's going to be a good player. The other name, too, I wanted to mention is, you know, on the back end, I know fans are really excited about Juho Pakkanainen. And from, you know, what I'm seeing, there may be a real chance that he does get at least a taste of the NHL this year. I don't know if, you know, he'll be a regular by any means, but I know he has a bright future, and the organization is excited about him as well.
It's funny. This is the first time in a long, long time I can remember where the Bruins had a legitimate, you know, prospects in their system. I mean, before you'd have a few, but they're pretty stacked, I think, overall. I'm not sure where they rank, but they got to be, you would think, top 10, right, in the NHL with all their prospects?
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's almost impossible to judge, you know, who has the best but they've definitely got to be up there. And that's been an organizational focus for Don Sweeney and Cam Neely as well, you know, to sort of reset the stockpile of players. I mean, it's right. a good problem to have. You sort of can't have too many good players, but the competition, once we get into the true training camp, is definitely going to be maybe the best it's been in a long time, to your point.
Definitely. Well, now we'll jump into the big question that everyone, I'm sure, wants to hear. Everyone, you know, all this Tavares talk. Well, you're pretty much on record saying you don't think he's going to sign with the Bruins. I don't think he's going to. I don't think Steve thinks he's going to either. That being said, if you were in a meeting with him, what would be your pitch to him to sign with the Bruins?
So I got to go on record here and say I am not opposed to John Tavares. He's an elite player. You know, the hockey fan in me would love to see him play night in and night out. But, yeah, to your point, I've been pretty vocal about saying I don't think it's going to happen. And the thing with that is, you basically have to move at least one of Backes or Krejci. I think you probably have to move both. And people are glossing over the fact that both of them have no movement clauses. And Krejci's been very vocal about saying he wants to finish his contract here in Boston and he's going to retire afterwards. So that's the reasoning behind that. But if I'm Don Sweeney and I'm Bruce Cassidy, who, you know, are out in LA pitching, you know, to John Tavares, really I look at it as you're telling him, we're your best chance to win a cup this year, next year, going forward with our young roster with, you know, Marchand and Pasternak and Bergeron. You know, obviously Chara is not going to be around much longer, but you look at the core with, you know, McAvoy and even these players that are in Providence, you're basically saying we're your best shot at winning now and going forward. And we've learned now that Tampa Bay has signed JT Miller in there, more or less out of the running for Tavares based on their cap situation. So if that's what you're pitching his agent and him on, it's really between you and Toronto, I think, to say, like, this is going to be your easiest path to reach the Stanley Cup final. So in terms of whether or not Tavares would be interested in Boston, I have no doubt that he's genuinely interested in Boston. My thing is just, you know, can Sweeney actually get David Backes or David Krejci to waive their no movement clauses? And I'm skeptical at best, I would say.
Yeah, see, that's my biggest thing too, is I don't think it's so much where they couldn't land him, because there's always a chance if you send down the table that you can strike something. To me, there's so much moving parts involved to bringing them here. It just seems like a big obstacle to even get them, you know, done at that point. Like you said, with Backes and Krejci and probably McQuaid at some point, you would think would have to get brought in the conversation too. It's just kind of surprising me that they actually, Tavares is actually sitting down with them. You would think him and his agent know the cap situation going on. So it's kind of surprising to me in a way that they're actually talking to him.
Yeah, I agree. And I know it's a popular sentiment I'm seeing on Twitter is that, like you said, if he's sitting down at the table, he's obviously interested. And if Don Sweeney's going out there, more than likely they think they have a chance to sign him. And, you know, I hope they do. You know, those of us old enough, as you know, and you both probably remember, there's a time where free agents were not interested in signing in Boston. And,
oh God,
you know, we never would have seen an elite player, you know, willingly meeting with the Bruins as one of his top teams. So from that perspective, it's exciting. Totally understand why fans are excited. It's just most of the time you see a player like that, you know, I go back to Steven Stamkos, where all the free agent frenzy was about him maybe coming here or, you know, wherever. And then, of course, he signs back, you know, with his team. And I think most likely that's what Tavares is going to do. He'll probably stay with the Islanders. They can give him the extra year. If not, and they somehow, as Kevin Paul DuPont mentioned earlier, if they find a magic wand to get rid of Backes and Krejci and land Tavares, yeah, I'm going to eat crow, but I'll be just as excited while I'm doing so.
Oh,
he is, he's an incredible player, and obviously it makes them easily one of the favorites to win the cup. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm always going to suck eating crow often. I thought I saw something tonight with Jimmy Murphy saying that he had heard chatter of, well, of course, it's obviously speculation, that the Bruins have talked to Backes and Krejci about, you know, a trade within moving their clauses, but I don't know how accurate that really is. So, you know, that's hearsay basically at this point.
That's something I would say, you know, respectfully to, you know, to anyone. This time of year, you have to sort of weigh, you know, the reports you're hearing, no matter who it's coming from. You have to remember that, you know, these players' agents are putting stuff out through some of the media members. There's all sorts of stuff going on. I know Kevin Paul DuPont mentioned that he had spoken to someone with the team about that exact scenario, and he reported that they had not asked, you know, for a list of teams. So there's always going to be contradicting reports to some extent or another when it comes to the NHL. Depends on your sources, and who knows? I don't know. Of the two, I think that Backes is much more likely to be moved. Like I said, my dream scenario is moving him to Minnesota, and he may be open to that. But like I said, when you really look at the cap numbers, I think to do it without really seriously altering the future of the Bruins, you really have to get rid of both Backes and Krejci. Otherwise, you get into a point where you may not lose McAvoy as an RFA next year, but you may lose Carlo and Heinen, or, you know, one of the two. And don't get me wrong, when you have a chance to get, you know, Tavares, you take that risk. But I think a lot of people are glossing over, you know, if they somehow miraculously get him, there's going to be a lot of changes to the team going forward. And you're probably going to see a lot more young players or cheap veterans on the bottom six than we're probably used to seeing too. So it'll be, I think all eyes are obviously on Tavares watch 2018. So we'll see.
Right. Well, that's all for questions I got for you tonight, but I just want to point out something that I've seen on your Twitter profile, that you're a vet, and I want to thank you for your service.
I am. I spent time in the Army, did a deployment to Iraq, what feels like a million years ago. I appreciate the support. Thanks.
Austin, you got anything else?
Nah, I mean, as far as like Tavares, like the fan in me wants him to come here.
How could you not?
Probably like, you know, probably like everybody else, but I don't know. I just like logically, you think Sweeney would have something planned out if he's going, you know, out to LA to meet with a guy, but I mean, I'm not really plugged in like a lot of people, but. I mean, I hope it happens. And like you said, if it does happen, hopefully they don't screw themselves in years to come trying to, you know, re-sign some of the good young players.
Yeah, I've seen that quite a few places. And my colleague Chris sort of put it the best way I've seen is that I think you're probably right. I think most people are probably right that, you know, Don and Tam have some semblance of a plan that they think would work. But the other thing is you're not going to say no if you get the chance to sit down and sort of pick his agent's mind. And, you know, you can get intel from that. They probably would do it even if they didn't think they could do it. You're not going to say no to it. But in general, I agree that if they're flying out there and you know, putting all the effort in, they at least think there's some pathway to Tavares landing here.
Cool.
Great. So where can everyone find you on social media?
So you can find me on Twitter at CBeswick. Beswick is B-E-S-W-I-C-K. You can also obviously follow along at our website, stanleycupofchowder.com. Their Twitter is at cupofchowder, A-H at the end. That's where most of my stuff is. And I'm always tweeting about hockey and the Bruins, so there's always something to talk about.
Yeah, awesome. Just for everyone who listens on to this, check him out. Colin's good.
Appreciate you guys having me on, too. Really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Have a good
always
night.
Welcome back.
Yeah, definitely.
You too. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Have a good one.
Wow, good.
Well, that's pretty informative, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny. It's like every time, you know, we get another guest on, the bar keeps going up and up and up.
Yeah.
That was really interesting stuff. Like, you know, a lot of times people sit there and think just because they cover people, like a particular team, not even just Boston, but in general, you know, that they're in the locker room, whatever the case may be, that they know everything. Well, don't, just because you're in the locker room doesn't mean people are talking to you.
Right.
So, I mean, you have to look at it like that, too.
Yeah, like
Collins. Some great points.
Collins, he said, too, you know, like you have agents feeding you information. Might not always be accurate.
Right. So it's like a game of spin the bottle, so to speak. Like, where's this player going to land in this city and for how much?
Right.
And the agents have, everyone has an agenda from the general managers, the players, and the players' agents.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting. I mean, they got, you know, no matter the shot that they have, whether it be a favorite, which I don't think they are, to just a small chance of actually signing him, you're at the table. That's all you could ask for at this point.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's very similar to how the Celtics have been going the last couple of years with free agents. You know, it started with Durant, them having a seat at the table with him, getting Horford, you know, getting Hayward. Who knows where the heck they're going to talk to this summer, but we'll save that for later when our next guest comes on. But
right,
it's
right.
Pretty cool. You know, if somehow Sweeney pulls it off, man.
Oh, huge. Oof. If he can pull it off, that would be huge, huge, huge going forward.
Yeah, I mean, because he hasn't really been good with free agents. He's been A-plus with the draft. I mean, there's probably there's probably not another GM in the league that's better than him in the draft. But
he's done really good. I mean,
yeah,
that's been his bread and butter is the draft, no question about it. Look at the players compared to when Shirelli was here compared to when Don took over, night and day. And see, I think the Bruins did Sweeney justice by not giving in to the popular sentiment that was going around where everyone and their brother was pissed off at Bruins front office because you know how we are around here. We get frustrated easily.
Oh, yeah.
They stayed the course, and now you're slowly starting to see, you know, the fruits of the labor that they put into this whole system that they developed. And it's night and day, the Shirelli regime to what you have now with Sweeney.
Oh, yeah. You know, no movement Shirelli. Yeah.
I mean, and you wonder how much of it is nearly, too, backing off or how much his hands are involved with the whole situation.
Yeah, I think he's kind of stepped off a little bit. I mean, he doesn't do many interviews or anything anymore. He's definitely out of the spotlight.
Right.
You know, smart move by him.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, like, Jesus, a year or two ago, where I was, like, really off my rocker, we were doing our live shows?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, you know, saying stuff about Cam Neely, you know something's up because I can send him to be Jesus Christ on skates.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the man was my absolute hockey hero growing up, and to this day, he's still my favorite hockey player of all time. Easy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the ultimate guests right there.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I'd be able to do it.
Right. Oh,
it'd be like several, you know, ice packs and you name it, a fan, an AC just to cool me off.
Yeah.
Because I'll be freaking right out.
So any of our listeners, if you know Cam or know how to get a hold of him, get him in touch with us on Twitter at SteveTheHoodPod. On Twitter. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, we'll personally erect a statue of you in your honor if you get that done. Yeah, we'll even bring you on that night to talk with them.
Yeah.
How's that for incentive?
Yeah.
Watch this kid. Hey, I know how to get a hold of them.
Right.
Yeah, right. Really.
Yeah.
Let's see. Hey, this is Cam. yeah. You sure this is you? Is this a voiceover agent or who is this?
Right.
It's just, wow. All right, moving along.
Yeah, so touch on the Red Sox a little bit. You know, the little Hanley situation. What a bizarre situation.
You know, late crazy, last wasn't it?
Late last week, it was brought out there that, you know, he was potentially involved in, like, this big drug ring and all sorts of, like, other stuff that now kind of seems to be nonsense that wasn't verified. And he's in the Dominican just kind of chilling out. You know, he says it's his decision not to play. So, I mean, I'm glad that he wasn't involved. I mean, personally, right. Just because he wasn't really getting it done anymore in baseball. You don't want to see anything like that happen to somebody like that. But.
No, we've had enough of, you know, this illegal activity. You know, I'm not even going to get into the guy's name, but you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
In the area. We don't need another one of those.
No.
Propping up again. I mean, it started out when they thought it was something even worse than that. And then
right.
It just kind of snowballed. It's like, you know, something like that is just crazy. You hear it, it's like, wow, really?
Yeah.
Is this possible? I mean, someone making buco dollars on a contract doing something as lunacy as this? Luckily, it wasn't, but let me ask you this, because I'll tell you what I think after. Him saying that the reason he's not playing is because he chooses not to. Do you believe that?
Yeah. Actually, I do, because he's getting paid. He's getting paid the rest of his $22 million, I think it is, this year. I mean, would he want to go play somebody for the league minimum? Like, maybe he's choosing it because it's not, like, a contender that's coming after him. Maybe it's somebody like the Rays or somebody that were interested, and he doesn't think it's, you know, worth it to just kind of go through the motions. Maybe that's what it is, but, I mean, he's getting paid $22 million to sit in the Dominican.
That part I agree with. He's getting paid, obviously. I don't think the phone's ringing. I really don't.
Hmm.
I think the best days of Hanley are over.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So, to me, it's kind of like one of those shots towards the Red Sox where, well, it don't matter. I'm still going to get paid anyway, so I'm just going to do my own thing. But I really honestly do not believe this phone's been blowing up. And it touched a little bit further. There's been, you know, reports now coming out where this had been rumored weeks ago and how no one in the Red Sox organization knew about it. I don't believe that for a second. To me, someone had to have known. And I wonder if other teams picked up on that and that was an immediate red flag.
Yeah, that's tough to say. It's the Red Sox, they haven't really been known as trustworthy all the time, so it very well could have been known, you know, he wasn't hitting, they were thinking about sitting him down a few times a week to play, you know, Moreland and company. He's going to become a headache, and then maybe they got wind of this situation, and they were like, oh, that's enough.
Right. So it's a big PR machine, the Red Sox are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's been their bread and butter since Henry and company came over.
Yep.
But, you know, it's so crazy in the baseball right now. I mean, it's a two-team race, basically. It's going to be that way for the rest of the year. The Rays are, what, 14 out?
Yeah, they're waving.
The Orioles are like 20 plus out. I mean, it's going to be a fun summer with the Sox and the Yankees. So I don't really think either team's going to pull away from each other.
Yeah, they're virtually tied, right? But
I think the Yankees have two games that they have to make up to catch the Sox, and
yeah,
I think they're up like a game. Or I think it's a game at this point. What's going to suck for the Yankees or the Sox is they could potentially just keep at this ridiculous clip that they're at now. They could potentially play a one-game wild card. Hypothetically, both teams win over 100 games, have a bad out, and you're gone to a team with 90 wins, say, hypothetically speaking.
Yep.
It's not a kick in the face.
Yeah, that's possible, too, because they've shown, you know, in games that they can just go ice cold as far as, like, hitting goes.
Right. I mean, they have obvious upgrades they got to do. They got to figure out second base, and that's the one glaring thing. Right now, on a 10-day disabled list, Pomerantz is throwing a bullpen session, I believe, and he still has to do a rehab, so he's not really all too close to coming back. So that stings a little bit. I mean, they got to get it together. They're winning, but there's holes in that lineup.
Oh, big time. Yep.
I mean, it would be a scary thought to see exactly where this team would be fully healthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, they got to do something with the bottom of the lineup. We talked about it last week.
Right.
Like if they just kind of stand pat and, you know, hope for the best, so to speak, I'm not going to be happy.
No. I mean, baseball is such a grind in general where, you know, everything's got to break right. And in any sport, that is not just baseball, but where it's so long, you're going to have lulls and you're going to have a time where the bottom of the order is doing its job and the top's not. And the top's producing, and the bottom is, and the middle's not. It's a really finicky game. And I don't know how you are about baseball. I know you're a fan and everything else, obviously, but we never really talked about the structure of the game. I don't really like how they keep tinkering with it. I mean, I'm somewhat, I guess, if you're going to call me just a baseball purist, I guess, just leave it alone entirely. Stop trying to modernize the game. It's not supposed to be. It's not meant to be that way.
No, I'm with you. I mean, the whole pitch clock idea is probably one of the dumbest things they've ever come up with, in my opinion. It's turning it into like an arcade-type game. It's, like you said, it's not meant to be modernized. You either like baseball or you don't.
Exactly. It's leaving it alone.
Yeah.
I don't understand how, you know, everyone's want to the most, they want quickness, they want speed, like they want the fastest phones and the fastest downloads, and you know, everyone's so busy with trying to live a fast situation life that they've kind of missed out on it. The small things sometimes, I know it's a little bit out there, off the beaten path a little bit, but to me, you gotta leave baseball alone.
Yeah, I mean,
let it play out.
Yeah, the one thing they could do is call the strike zone how it's supposed to be called.
Yeah, good luck with that.
You know,
the thing that got me a little bit cranky was now they were considering setting out extra innings with a guy on second. To me, that is utter lunacy.
Yeah, that's
to do something like that.
Yeah,
and then they have another thing where they were considering the last at-bats for your team, you could have anyone in your order bat. That's another crazy situation to me.
Yeah.
If you happen to get to the bottom of the ninth or the top of the ninth, whatever the situation may be for your team, and you have your seventh, eighth, and ninth batter up, well, that's just life.
Right.
That's just the way it goes. You're unlucky, but you should have been playing better along the way. Obviously, you run into a good pitcher, whatever the case may be, and that's just the way it breaks sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, maybe you should play better for the first 8 innings.
Right.
Right. Why reward a team for being behind?
Exactly. That's my point. Isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I just like to keep things the way they are.
Yeah, or if you're down by more than four runs in the bottom of the ninth, you only get one out instead of three.
Right.
It's like, what?
It's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, just stop messing with it. Like, I hate, too, how, like, the NFL keeps messing with crap.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, they're just as bad. Like, the whole stupid catch rule and everything else.
Right.
You know, they're messing with it just for, like, fantasy football purposes.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Fantasy football, what they should do is, like, let you draft individual defensive players.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that'd be interesting, you know. Well, I'm taking J.J. Watt or somebody, you know, instead of, oh, no, you got to pick, like, the Houston defense or the Patriot defense or all, you know, some crap like that.
Right.
But that's totally off subject.
Sure is. But, is there anything else you want to touch on?
Yeah, Red Sox, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. is kind of heating up a little. It's time to trade him.
Oh, my God. You're going to put Murph in convulsions. He has to say that.
Perfect time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Murph, I'm sorry if you're listening to this. He just went off the rails a little bit. Disregard. Nah, no, he's a hot topic. Obviously.
Yeah. I just don't want to see a third year of him hitting 115 in the playoffs.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He's actually been hitting the ball pretty hard lately.
Yeah, he has an RBI or two tonight. So like I said, like perfect time. Let him get his average up a little bit and then see what you can get for him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I know Murph and a lot of other people wouldn't be happy, but.
Well, you better commend Murph for his take on the greatest center field glove of all time. That took brass balls right there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm throwing every center field I can think of at him. Griffey, you name it, and he just was not budging. You know. You got to respect a guy like that, especially the way he was struggling at the plate.
Yep.
And he's slowly starting to come around now, and you don't even blink. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. Be nice to see him get going. I mean, he's hit the ball pretty hard lately, a little bit unlucky at times, too.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. You never know.
Yeah,
they supposedly want to get an arm and a second baseman for the bullpen.
Yeah, they might need
a bullpen arm. Yeah, Jesus.
You know, Velasquez, he might fill in, or Brian Johnston. Johnson, I think is how you say it. But,
right.
But, you know, they might need a starting pitcher by the deadline, too, if Wright's out and Pomerantz, like, he belongs in the bullpen. Period. End of discussion. He's not a good starter.
No. No, I shouldn't say that really because he's having a bad year, but when he's on, he's pretty good. Serviceable, at least, I should say.
Yeah, serviceable, but you need more than
that. You wouldn't give him his due anyways because I kind of like him, so you'd go against him automatically just out of that.
No, I mean, he had some good starts last year.
Right.
I'll give him that.
They get lit up in the postseason.
Yeah, I'm about consistency, and he just doesn't have it starting. And he gets hurt, too. I think it's about the same time last year he got hurt, too.
Well, since we're still yakking about the Sox, you know what's really frustrating? The run support that Chris Sale gets.
Right? Yeah, it's brutal.
I mean, think about some of the starts he's had with zero run support. What would his record be if they actually hit for him?
Huh. That'd be crazy. Crazy good.
He'd be way up. I mean, he's good as is now.
Yeah, he's a lot like Pedro. Pedro back in the day got screwed with run support, too.
Well, Pedro very rarely needed it.
Yeah, but still, like, if some games he gives up one run and up, that's the L.
Pedro's next class. I mean, I like Sale. Don't get me wrong. Awesome talent, but a Pedro he is not.
Yeah, I don't think
any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
I saw an article where they thought that Chris Sale was this era's Randy Johnson, and that's a stretch, too.
Oh, agreed, yeah. Yeah, like Randy Pedro were, you know, almost once-in-a-lifetime type pitchers.
Oh, crazy. Crazy good.
Remember when Randy threw that pitch and took out the bird?
That was great. Out of nowhere, too, the bird just got pulverized.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was ridiculous.
All you saw was feathers.
Yep.
That was, I mean, for me in my lifetime, Randy Johnson's the best left-handed pitcher I've ever seen. Easy.
Yeah, no argument for me.
Him, and then probably number two would be Glavin, probably.
Hmm.
Which is interesting because they're night and day people. I mean, big unit had the power, the fastball, the nasty slider. And Glavin was all about nibbling at the plate. Didn't have an overbearing fastball by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
So, I mean, they're the two best lefties I've seen in my lifetime. Easy.
Yeah, I can't think of any better. No way.
And then, I mean, you start talking in the righties. I mean, where do you want to begin? Pedro?
Yep.
To me, my favorite, other than, well, here's a random question for you. Who's your favorite right-handed pitcher outside of the Red Sox organization from the time we were kids up till now?
Ooh. I was a pretty big Greg Maddux fan.
Yes, yeah, see, I'm right there, would you? I mean, how do you not like him? Another one who was just filthy.
Yeah. Oh, another lefty. Andy Pettit was pretty good.
Oh, I can't go there.
I'm not saying he's better than the other two. He was still pretty good.
Yeah, he was all right, I guess. Not much I'll say about that.
David Wells, he was interesting.
Yeah, a little bit. But there really, in our time, hasn't really been a ton of dominating lefties that are like world class.
No.
Huh. Crazy, isn't it?
Good stuff. Just a little bit on the Patriots, their training camp schedule. Got released July 26th, 27th, 28th, and 29th. All starts at 9:15. So getting closer.
Should be another interesting year down at Gillette.
Yeah, and, you know, Edelman, like, he had his appeal heard. Now they're just kind of waiting to see if they reduce it, get rid of it, tell him to pound sand. He's sitting out four games. But like if it was Roger handling the appeal, I'd say he has no chance. But since it's an arbitrator, he's got a shot at it. He's, from what everything I've read, he's not really saying he didn't take anything. It's just that it was mishandled, whatever that means.
Well, that's lingo technicality, basically, is what he's saying. He's trying to get off on a technicality.
Yeah, Sherman did it years ago, but
now I saw how you voted in the group poll. You still sticking with that?
What did I say? I clicked on it fast. I don't even remember.
You said zero. You thought he was going to get away with it.
Yeah, I think he is, because of that technicality.
I think he'll get reduced to 2 games.
Because, you know, the NFL, they're constantly doing stupid stuff. They can't get out of their own way. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, is that probably more of the Patriots fan in me voting? Probably. But
probably.
You could
I mean,
be
you
right,
say
though.
You say zero, I say two, so that pretty much seals his fate at four.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, yep. We're not in that meeting, so, I mean, really, it's just us guessing at this point.
Right.
You know, is that his
agent? It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's probably his agent throwing a lot of that stuff out in the media.
Could be.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that's kind of funny, this ESPN players list where the players vote on, you know, the top 100 players. Who's number one, by the way?
For football?
Who's the number one player in football voted on by the players?
Oh, Brady.
You like that?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because every fan outside New England, for the most part, doesn't like Brady. It's a hot topic no matter what. Anytime you mention Patriots or Brady in general, it's like nuclear. But what's that say for a player that's 41, voted number one by his peers?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
It's never been done before, for the first time. I think he's the first multiple-time player, isn't he?
Pretty sure, unless probably at least back-to-back.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll be able to touch more up on Patriots when camp starts. That's when you start. You know, there's going to be a lot of interesting battles this year.
Absolutely.
Particularly at wide receiver. So
yep.
We'll be able to break stuff down a lot better then when camp starts with the Pats. Right now, it's outside of Edelman, it's kind of quiet right now.
Yeah, well, Mitchell, too, he said something recently like he's still kind of working back from his knee issue, which that's not a great sign at all.
See, to me, unfortunately, I think he's just going to be one of those players where he just doesn't fully get it together on the field health-wise, unfortunately, because he's a great talent.
Yeah, take my knees.
Right. Here you go.
Yeah, I'll switch with you.
See if this helps you.
Yeah.
See if that helps. But for the most part, it's kind of quiet down there. It's kind of strange. We hear so much talk about Belichick and Brady and Guerrero, and it's all kind of quiet right now.
Yeah, it did. It was pretty much nonstop, and then like somebody turned off the switch.
Right. I don't know if that's a good sign or what the case is, but
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Probably a lot of that crap was made up by the media.
Very well could be.
Yeah.
Could
something
be.
To do.
You know how Boston beat writers in general like to talk.
Yeah, I mean, who knows where it's coming from, really? People could be feeding them stuff. I don't know. But thankfully, the season's almost here. I think it's, what, 8 more Sundays until football starts? Something like that.
Not soon enough.
Yeah. Ah, it's a great time of year. You get Red Sox still going, Patriots, and then if we're really lucky, all 3 of them will be playing, and the Bruins.
Right.
But it's pretty much all I got until the next guest comes on.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, cool. You want to take a quick break and come back with Sam?
Sounds good.
All right, sounds good. We'll be back. Now we got Sam Sheehan on with us. How's it going tonight?
I'm hanging in there, gentlemen. I'm feeling strong. I'm feeling like I could dunk. I feel like I went to Texas A&M. I feel like my name is Robert Williams. Feeling very thick and jacked.
Nice.
You block shots.
I block shots. You know, I screen. I didn't miss this call though, So that is one thing. I'm not a perfect replica of Robert Williams at this point, but I'm working on it.
Well, that's a good segue into it. How do you feel about the pick?
I'm feeling pretty good about it. I mean, I think that, you know, you take a look at Robert Williams, you know, kind of a guy who coming into the, you know, sort of coming into the draft was considered a lottery talent. This is a guy who probably almost certainly would have been in the lottery if he hadn't chosen to, you know, gone back to school last year. So instead, you know, he kind of finds himself on this draft night. You know, this was a time when there were a lot of, you know, good young bigs at the top of the lottery, but not that many sort of in the middle. And he was kind of considered to be like the big second tier prize for anyone who was kind of looking for a big man. So I really didn't think it was at all realistic to expect him to sort of drop as far as he did. And yet here he went. He, you know, the Lakers took Mo Wagner from or Wagner, I'm not sure exactly how you say it, from Michigan ahead of him, and you know, Williams fell to them. There was some whispers about maybe some knee injury concerns. Doesn't look like that's gonna, you know, either that was not true or he'll, but it sounds like he's gonna be ready to go for summer league. And you know, there are some personality concerns which, you know, may have sort of reared their head already with him sort of not being around for his first sort of press conference call for the Celtics. Missed that. Also seems like it was maybe a late night. I mean, what are you going to do? You're a college kid. You're celebrating. I sleep through a couple of things. So, you know, I think it's a really good high upside pick for the Celtics, especially given where they selected him, because, you know, kind of at the end of the first round, you're just looking for any guy who can kind of make the rotation. And I think that, you know, Robert Williams could definitely be just that.
Do you actually think that he could potentially work himself into the starting rotation? You kind of think he's just going to be one of those fill-in guys, so to speak? I mean, obviously at this point, we've never seen any him play a second in any NBA ball, but just off the cuff, what would you say to that?
I think it's definitely, you know, I think it's certainly possible. I mean, the way that he projects, you kind of watch him at Texas A&M, and he's one of these hyper-athletic dunking kind of fives. We've seen guys like that in the league do really well. I mean, DeAndre Jordan with the Clippers, more recently Clint Capella with the Rockets. You know, basically the two ways you got to survive in today's NBA as a, you know, a natural center, a five, you've either got to, you know, be able to shoot and stretch the floor and be very skilled. You know, kind of guys like Nikola Jokic, Al Horford, you know, some of these other guys who would just really bring a lot to the table. You can be like someone who's like very dominant, like a Joel Embiid type or an Anthony Davis type. Or you can be one of these, you know, rim running pure fives that sort of, you know, put pressure on the ball out of pick and roll, you know, really attack the rim, close hard, and, you know, kind of catch lob dunks. And I think that's Robert Williams' future in this league. You know, he's not totally unskilled. He's like, he can pass pretty well. You know, if the defense rotates to him, he's good at making those extra last second passes, but he's not much of a shooter. That doesn't really matter as much on a Celtics roster that, you know, is kind of custom built for him in more ways than one. You know, he's going to have a real chance to develop. I don't think we're going to see much of him early on in the year. I think he's going to have a chance to sort of, you know, learn and develop and sort of have, you know, Brad Stevens, Greg Kaizen Sensei, life coach, sort of, you know, talk and coach him up into, you know, being a professional and sort of, you know, handling his business. But he's definitely got the athletic talent to be like, you know, one of these elite, you know, shot blocking, rim running, you know, rim protecting centers in the league. And I think that's I really don't think it could have gone realistically much better for the Celtics than him dropping 27. I mean, they didn't trade any future assets. They got a guy who's got a real shot to be a starter. He's going to be on that rookie scale deal for the next 4 years, which is going to be very cheap, which is going to be really important to the Celtics as they, you know, this payroll kind of climbs higher and higher in future years. So really just an all-around win-win for the Celtics, even in a worst-case scenario where, you know, he doesn't pan out or, you know, the personality issues are too much to be overcome. You know, at the end of the day, it's still a number 27 pick. You don't really expect too much out of those picks. You know, those guys, not all of those guys make it. So you kind of consider it a success if those guys are even rotation players. So pretty low risk, high upside move here for Danny Ainge and the rest of the Celtics.
Well, didn't they on draft night compare him to a Jordan Nkumpelo, like you said?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. So, I mean, I think, yeah.
I mean, that being said, you just got to hope to hell that he doesn't keep shooting free throws like DeAndre does. So they're in trouble in that department.
Yeah. Well, I got bad news. He is like 44-45% free throw shooter or something like that college. So the shooting is not there. That said, you know, you don't need a high shooting percentage to dunk. So he does have that going for him, but and his shot's not totally broken. He could learn to shoot, but that's definitely not something that's in his toolbox right now. So that would probably, you know, affect his ability to be on the floor late in games. You know, coaches could choose to, you know, hack him and sort of put him on the line. But, you know, we're going to see. Again, he's a really high upside guy, and I think that, you know, this is definitely a swing for the fences pick. I think the Celtics were trying to trade up for him, but they found, like, once he dropped to, like, you know, 20s, mid-20s or low 20s, and they found, like, the prices for trading up at that point too expensive, so they just kind of stayed put and you dropped to them anyway. So that's kind of, you know, goes to show you just what kind of a nice night the Celtics had as far as luck was concerned. Just what the Celtics needed, more luck. They haven't had enough of that recently.
I like the pick. To me, he reminds me of a bruiser.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's the type of stuff I like. I always want, you know, of course, I like to go back to the older days with Bird and McHale and all of them where it's pretty physical down low. I like to have a center that makes you pay when you get in the paint as much as possible. I mean, the league's way different now than it was back then, obviously. But switching gears a little bit, can you tell us about this Wanamaker guy? Because I don't really know much about him.
I'm not super up to speed on him either. I do know he's been playing overseas for a little bit. Kind of the parallel I would draw is that to Shane Larkin. He's got a pretty similar situation to Shane Larkin had coming in last year, where he's a guy who kind of washed out of the league and has sort of been, abroad, playing international ball. And now he's sort of left some money on the table with these international clubs to kind of come back to the NBA and try and make it here. Shane Larkin did something pretty similar. I think his role is going to be, you know, sort of the ball handler wing type. He's definitely going to, like, bolster the deep bench on the wing while being, like, a minimum guy. I think this is, like, the kind of the thing the Celtics were looking for here was, just to get, like, a little bit more deep bench help from, some of these international guys and to kind of strike while the iron was hot, you know, here before free agency, when you can kind of get some of these guys on deals before other teams have figured out what exactly their needs are going to be, at the start of July. So the Celtics sort of get what they clearly consider one of the better international talents out there, like a guy who's done well on the international market and would be available for, you know, these minimum style deals. So they get someone cheap to sort of fill out the end of their bench. I wouldn't be surprised if, it ended up that, if they needed to put Abdel Nader into some sort of deal or, they aren't able to re-sign Jabari Bird to, you know, kind of a big league deal after his two-way deal last year. I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, Wanamaker sort of being the de facto replacement for, some of those guys on the deep bench. I don't really expect him to be much of a part of the Celtics beyond that, unless they had, pretty similar serious injury concerns to last year, but he's, you know, sort of a, you know, typical guard, you know, big guard, small wing that can sort of handle the ball and sort of take care of things, you know, just sort of create an extra ball handler on the roster that can, just in case, you know, things don't pan out as much with Marcus Smart here sort of heading into free agency.
Interesting. You going to chime in here, Thompson? Are you sleeping on us?
No, I'm here. You just kind of led into the question. What do you think is going to happen with Marcus Smart?
So I see things a little bit differently. I know that Keith has said a couple of times in the various different places. I think you guys have had Keith on before. He thinks the Celtics are sort of heading towards a qualifying option type of thing with Marcus Smart. I would be kind of surprised to see that. I think the Celtics and Marcus can sort of come to better terms than that. You know, because the big problem here for Marcus is that he's what's called a restricted free agent. So when you're a restricted free agent, other teams can offer you money, and they can offer you a contract and you can sign it, and it's called an offer sheet at that point. And your team, the other team that you are, you know, would be leaving, has the option over a 2-day span to match that offer sheet, and then that contract just becomes a contract, you know, that they own, and then, you know, you stay with that team. So a lot of times teams don't really like to go after guys in restricted free agency unless they're kind of the top of the top. Because if you do sort of go after someone in restricted free agency, the team has 2 days to match, you know, that deal, and you can kind of be caught in limbo though. You can't use your money. You can't sign anybody else for that money that you had promised this guy, because you've got to see what's going to happen with this offer sheet. And things, you know, can kind of move fast in restricted free agency. And a lot of times, you know, if it's a, you know, you've got to be kind of signing them to a toxic deal to get the other team to not match. So a lot of teams, you know, it's a pretty inefficient way to go about things. You usually get younger players. You can usually get better players, but it's just not very likely that you're going to, you know, walk away from them unless you're giving them a contract that the other team is not going to want to match. So, you know, in the instance of Marcus Smart, it's tough out there right now in the, you know, sort of in NBA free agency. There's not a lot of teams that have cap space right now because everybody signed a lot of big deals when the salary cap had a big spike in revenue when 2016, when they changed around the TV deals. So now not a lot of teams have space. And, you know, I think that teams would probably more inclined to use their space on, you know, other free agents, you know, like a LeBron James or a Paul George, you know, like a, or maybe to target somebody like Jabari Parker or Yusuf Nurkic. I'm not sure that I see the team that has a lot of use for Marcus Smart and his particular set of skills, just because, you know, he definitely impacts winning, but he just can't shoot the ball very well. And you've got to have a very specific roster that the Celtics, you know, happen to have, that has shooting kind of everywhere in order to really maximize Smart. So I just don't see the team that might have the space for Marcus Smart. Dallas maybe could be a possible fit. Orlando could be a possible fit. You know, I'm not sure if Atlanta would want to do anything with him, but those are kind of the only teams that I really see being an option. And I'm not sure that those teams wouldn't have, you know, more important, higher priority targets than that, you know, maybe like a Boogie Cousins or, you know, some of these other top level free agents. So if I'm the Celtics, I sort of stand pat and see. I really think that it can end up being like a big get for them, where they can sort of, you know, come to an agreement with Marcus where they agree to sort of something similar to what they agreed to Amir Johnson and Jonas Jerebko back in the day, where they have you know, a big 2-year deal where Marcus would get more upfront cash, would be a fully non-guaranteed year, so that to give the team a little bit more flexibility. So that's what they'd get, and then Marcus gets to go right back on the market as an unrestricted free agent in 1 or 2 years time, where he could get a much bigger contract, just because he doesn't, you know, that he would be unrestricted, so all those matching things wouldn't come into play, and teams would probably be more willing to give him a you know, a bigger offer than he would get in that restricted free agency. So there's a lot going on there. I sort of see it as a way that there could be something really interesting there as far as, you know, coming together and sort of compromising with each other on a higher, you know, single season pay, but maybe not as long, to give Celtics some flexibility and maybe create some salary for them to, you know, send out in trades, maybe like a Kawhi Leonard trade or an Anthony Davis trade later on down the line if those things appear.
Speaking of Kawhi, where do you feel he's going to end up? I mean, give us three teams that you feel are the actual front runner right now for him. You can include the Spurs if you want to.
Yeah, I think the most likely team for him right now is the Spurs. You know, they can kind of do what many people sort of think that the Cavs should have done with Kyrie last year, and just sort of, you know, dare him. You know, they could offer him the Supermax, which is a huge contract if they so choose. That's a lot of money for Kawhi to turn down. He won't get that money back if he goes to another team. And it's more than we are typically talking about, because the Spurs actually drafted him and he hit certain criteria to qualify for an immediate sort of 35% or 30%. I can't remember which one of the cap. I think it's 35% of the cap, which is significantly more money than he could make anywhere else. The Spurs do kind of hold the cards. I don't think they're going to be dealing him for a nothing trade. You know, the Lonzo Ball poo-poo platter probably is not getting things done, you know, for the Lakers, if that's what they want to do. So I'd say the Spurs are still definitely in the driver's seat, as much as it might not seem that way. I think Philly would be a really good fit for him. I think they're definitely might be exploring things. I'm not sure if Philly would want to deal Fultz, though. And I think that probably would be what it would take, unless they are, you know, pretty much sending everything else out. I guess it depends on how highly the Spurs sort of value some of the other picks. They did just get a really good pick on draft night in the 2021. I think the Lakers, it doesn't behoove them much to trade, to really break the bank, trade for Kawhi, unless LeBron and Paul George end up there, or, you know, otherwise something like that. They're already got the super team. I don't think it makes much sense for them to pay a lot just to get Kawhi when they could wait a year and possibly get him, you know, basically for free by just signing him, because it sounds like that's where he wants to go. So I think those are all really interesting. One team I think is kind of a dark horse is the Houston Rockets. I don't think that they would deal Kawhi sort of in the division like that, or in the conference, but sort of for the same reasons that LeBron James might want to go to the Rockets to win. You know, the Rockets, if they wanted to put together, you know, a whole bunch of firsts and, you know, maybe send back like Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker and some of these other pieces, they could definitely, you know, sort of get Kawhi in on their team and immediately make themselves like a real problem for the Warriors in the West. So I think that they're a pretty intriguing destination, just because they are so close and they do have so much to gain from sort of trading for someone like that. The only thing about that is I don't think the Spurs are going to be very interested in creating a super team in their own division.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was always talk, you know, maybe Boston was linked to him. But it feels like now when any star is available, Boston's somehow linked to him in some capacity. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I feel like as far as Boston to Kawhi is sort of concerned, Zach Lowe on ESPN.com wrote a really great piece recently about sort of the value of Jaylen Brown, because it's sort of understood that if they dealt for Kawhi, it would probably take Jason Tatum, who's probably a non-starter as far as the Celtics are concerned, or Jaylen Brown. And, you know, there was a really interesting compare and contrast about Jaylen Brown, you know, Do you stick with the cheaper guy who kind of is developing at an eerily similar pace to Kawhi Leonard? Like, if you look at Kawhi Leonard's, you know, box score stuff and, you know, Jaylen Brown's box score stuff, there's a lot of similarities there. So, you know, do you risk that, you know, trading a guy who could develop into the guy that you're trading for, you know, years in advance? I think a lot of fans would say, no, you take the surefire thing. I'm not so sure, given, you know, some of their money, the Celtics money issues they're going to have later on down the line, and the fact that Kawhi is going to be an expiring contract and, you know, might not, you know, be back. You know, he could bolt after a year, which is sort of the other big part of this. So really interesting, to sort of think of the Celtics there. I think that they're probably more inclined to hold on to their, you know, chips for Anthony Davis in the long run.
That seems to be the big, you know, I don't know how the hell even word it. He's like the top prize that the Celtics have been clamoring over for God knows how long at this point. We're always hearing they want Davis. I would love to have Davis, like anyone in their right mind would want to have him. But what do you think about the reports that you keep seeing that George is likely to stay put in Oklahoma City? Do you put any stock to that, or you think that's just agents talking to players or whatever the case may be?
They could certainly pay him the most money, you know, so that kind of makes sense for him, you know, as far as, you know, making sure that he's getting paid. You know, the way the deal is structured, it, you know, it could make sense for him to, you know, if he does want to go anywhere, if LeBron James stays put or he doesn't see anywhere that really, you know, fits his need, he might, you know, he might just wait for a second. You know, a lot of these guys are trying to sort of unify and kind of create a big team. These guys want to win and they want to get paid. They're the two main things. And, you know, I'm not sure he's going to, if LeBron James stays put or goes somewhere that doesn't have cap space, there's not really a team that's going to be able to just pay Paul George, you know, much money that's going to be better than the situation that he's in. You know, I know everyone likes to make fun of Carmelo Anthony and his big contract, and for, you know, for good reason, but Russell Westbrook, as for all of his flaws, is still like a very good player and a much better running mate than he'd have pretty much anywhere else. I mean, you know, maybe Dallas might be an interesting fit for Paul George. I think definitely he's definitely better than anyone the Lakers have on their roster. They've got some interesting young guys, but none of them are anywhere near, you know, the level of some of these other guys. I think the really interesting one is Philadelphia. If, you know, they don't get LeBron, they have a team that he could pretty seamlessly slide right into, where a role that would be pretty much exactly made for him. You know, he could sort of be the head star and sort of develop alongside Joel Embiid and Bill Simmons. He's probably got more cachet than those guys, so it could be kind of his team. But at the same time, he's not the only guy there. So, you know, and if LeBron does, you know, exit the East, you know, going to something like, you know, someplace like Houston, you know, he would join a Philly team that would have a pretty good shot to go to the finals. You know, they'd really just be a Boston and Philly bloodbath in the Eastern Conference Finals to kind of see who advances. So I think that that would be very interesting, to say the least. So, I think that that's probably the place I would go, or I would recommend he go if I were his agent. I think staying put, and if he stays put in Oklahoma City, even if it's just for a year, if he signs a little 1+1 deal to sort of see what happens in 2019, that could also be smart, and he could kind of, you know, get a better lay of the land before he locks himself into anything, and, you know, make the most money he could possibly make next year as well.
Stuff, Thompson.
Yeah, it's a scary proposition if George does end up in Philly.
It's Yeah, it wouldn't be great. Luckily, Ben Simmons is a coward who can't shoot threes, so we've got that going for us.
Right.
Ben Simmons, shoot a three, you coward. That's what everyone's got to remember. That's going to be the mantra for years to come.
How did you feel with Brad not winning Coach of the Year and Tatum not getting Rookie of the Year?
I was steamed. I'm not going to lie. The Brad Stevens Coach of the Year thing for me was very – it had me hot. I went on our podcast, you know, all of this roundtable. I was hot. I did a little five-minute monologue about that because it was just – it's just outrageous. Because my thing here is if Brad Stevens can't win it in a year when he had two All-Stars go down for the year, one of which he was out with for pretty much the entire season. He had young players all up and down the roster, and yet he still fashioned it into a team that was, one half of basketball away from being in the finals against the Warriors. And winning 55 games, bear in mind that the Celtics over-under for wins coming into the year, I believe, with Gordon Hayward healthy, I think was 49, and I think they cleared that by, six wins. They beat their over-under by six wins when Gordon Hayward went down. I think that dropped to, like, 38 wins or something after he got hurt, and they won 55 games. I just – it boggles the mind to me because I really don't see – where Brad Stevens, like what he could possibly do that would top that. I feel like in the future, he's going to kind of, if they win a lot of games, it's going to be kind of written off as the weakness of the East. And it just sort of feels like we're at this place where, he's sort of going to be kind of similar to LeBron, where, if a guy is really good for a long period of time, you sort of start measuring him against himself. Dwayne Casey was not a good coach for the past two or three years, and he got a lot of votes because of how much he improved. I think it's pretty, even giving Casey the biggest benefit of the doubt, I think it's pretty much a coin flip, which one of those guys you would take. So to see the overwhelming, win for Casey just sort of shows how narratively, this can get affected, sort of how nice a guy is, or, sort of circling the wagons around a guy who might get fired to sort of, help save that guy's job can sort of, affect some of these votes. So I was not pleased. I really don't see. I think if Brad Stevens wins in the future, it'll essentially be a makeup call for, I think he's already there. I think people already sort of understand that he's one of the better coaches in the league. But it's just, he's got a sort of he's coaching against himself versus the other coaches. It's a very similar thing to how Greg Popovich is sort of handled, where he should probably win Coach of the Year every year. But, that's just not how it works. That wouldn't be any fun. So, you sort of get measured against, your own good performances.
I bet if you took a poll with the players of the NBA, Brad Stevens will win Coach of the Year.
Yeah, if you took
probably
a poll with
slide.
I know if you took a poll of inside the Evan Turner household, it would be a 100% approval rating because he got him. He basically helped him pull off a small robbery. That was a heist movie, basically, with Brad Stevens driving the van to sort of get Evan Turner into that Portland contract. So, big things. And you've seen it. We've seen now there's been enough of a track record of guys playing under Brad Stevens, going elsewhere. They improve so much in Boston. They leave. They kind of drop back to their old levels. We've seen it with, like, Avery Bradley. We've seen it with Isaiah Thomas. We've seen it with Jay Crowder. In Thomas's case, he was hurt, so there's a little bit of a benefit of the doubt there. But, Aron Baynes comes in and is outstanding. Just so many of these guys who Evan Turner, sort of played themselves into bigger, better contracts in Boston and just haven't been able to perform the same way once they leave. It's, after a certain while, you just kind of acknowledge the pattern.
Right. I see a lot of people saying how they want to trade for a big star, but to to me, I don't kind of get that in a way, because we still haven't seen what this team's capable of with a healthy Hayward. I mean, he's an all-star coming back, so you're essentially getting an all-star this offseason. So I don't understand the how
exactly
mindset sometimes.
You have a team that was, you know, what, 24 minutes away from the Eastern Conference Finals, and you're adding two all-stars to it. You know, I don't know. It seems like, you know, let's let these guys play before we start going crazy about big trades. I will say, you know, the one kind of caveat to that is Anthony Davis really does have that like MVP type of sort of game changing potential, especially at the big position, and could really be. I think if Anthony Davis is available, it's pretty hard to not do much about that. But, you know, that said, we'll see what happens in Jason Tatum's sophomore year, Jaylen Brown's third year, because those guys have done nothing but improve, really since they got here to Boston.
So yeah, who on the Celtics is pretty much untouchable for you?
Jason Tatum's close. Yeah. Jason Tatum's pretty close. I'm not – Jaylen Brown is a tier lower, but is still – there aren't many guys I would trade Jaylen Brown for in the league either. I go back and forth on the Kawhi Leonard thing. I have a little bit of a homer, so I err on the side of not trading Jaylen. I think I would probably do it for Anthony Davis or maybe like Giannis – Antetokounmpo, but other than that, I don't really think there's guys out there. I just Jaylen's such a smart, hardworking, talented guy, and it's just I really think he's going to continue to improve going forward. So yeah, it just seems like a fool's errand to sort of give up on a guy like that.
All this talk of Kentucky stardom, Steve. I'm going to put Buffet on pretty soon.
yeah. It's gonna be a really nice time to be a Celtics fan here going forward. We're entering a pretty good time, especially with these Kings and Memphis and Clippers picks sort of coming down the pipe here in the next year or two.
Right. So let's get right to this whole LeBron situation. What's your sense on what happens with him?
I've been advocating online that I want him to go back to Cleveland to make Dan Gilbert pay roughly the GDP of Croatia in luxury tax payments. I think that'd be a good revenge on LeBron's part. And then he could keep things open. He could make this guy that this owner of the Cavs that he doesn't like very much sort of pay through the nose a giant luxury tax payment. And, you know, he's good enough to probably get them back at least to the Eastern Conference semifinals, maybe even if the Cavaliers were to get lucky, I think they could, be back in the finals again. If their Colin Sexton, their pick, ends up panning out and being, a really good player. But I really think that it's probably looking like the Lakers. There's a lot of talk of him going around LA area schools, looking for a kid. You have two mansions out there to be around things. And, one thing we know about LeBron James is he really likes having the power, sort of controlling the franchise and shaping it the way he wants it to be. The Lakers give him a real opportunity to do that. They have a lot of cap space. They've got young players they could probably trade for more established guys. If you're LeBron James, you'll say, okay, I sign here. If you guys do this, this, and this, go get it. And you have an opportunity to build your own team in a very big market, nice weather city. The only problem is you're playing in the West, which is, a lot harder than the East, but everything else lines up pretty well. So I think the Lakers are definitely a front runner. I think Philly is interesting. he could, if he wanted to stay in the East and win, that's probably the best bet for him for a lot of the similar reasons we laid out with Paul George earlier. And I think, you know, going to the Rockets, sort of reunifying with his buddy Chris Paul out there, you know, there's ways to trade for him in like sort of a sign and trade sort of situation. And then they would definitely be the prohibitive favorites. So I think that would be where I'd go if I'm LeBron, if I'm trying to win. So I think the place to go if you want to, you know, win in the next year or two, get like one or two more surefire rings is Houston. I think the place you go if you want to, you know, kind of be in contention through the end of your career is probably like Philly. And I think the place that you go if you want to kind of like shape things and sort of, you know, live comfortably and kind of be in control, I think you go to the Lakers. So those are kind of his options out there. And I think all of those are, you know, pretty good options for him.
See, I was having a conversation with Steve off air about LeBron. And to me, unless he gets another star to go to L.A., I don't see him going there, even though, like you said, he'd have the power to try to get people on the team because of the young talent that L.A. has. But to me, I kind of got a feeling he's going to stay put and just buy in for a year and then see what happens after next season.
Yeah, and you know, he could get a little revenge on Dan Gilbert too. I mean, it's a great proposition. I love it. That would be the one I would choose for LeBron, just because I'm not a huge fan of Mr. Gilbert. So I think it'd be very funny if he had to pay for a team, pay, you know, an insane amount of money. I think it'd be like $50 million or something like that on top of the rest of the roster payments, just in luxury tax, to have a team that flamed out and LeBron immediately left. So that would be good. LeBron, if you're listening, that's the choice for you. I'm looking out for you, buddy.
Right.
You can get into it in free agency. A lot of teams are going to have a lot more cap space in 2019 too. So, you know, it kind of opens his options up too. You know, other stars are kind of hitting the free agency then, like Kawhi Leonard. So, you know, he could sort of, and Kyrie Irving for that matter. So, you know, he can kind of, you know, figure some of that stuff out.
Right, absolutely. Well, that's all I got. You got anything else, Steve?
Yeah, just one more. Like, do you think Aaron Baines comes back?
That's a great question. I think he does. I think they'll figure something out. Baines can probably get more money outside of Boston, but probably not that much more. The big market, like the kind of how easy it is to sort of get good bigs of Baines caliber, like the best bigs, you know, like the, you know, your Nikola Jokic's, your Al Horford's, those guys are always going to be expensive. But these, you know, sort of rotation style guys, there's a lot of those guys out there, like Kyle O'Quinn, Dwayne Dedman. So, you know, the Celtics aren't under a lot of pressure to bring him back. I think they'd like to, just because he did fit so well and did such a good job for them. And I think that, you know, it sort of behooves Baines to come back too, because it's not a very friendly situation, as we went over in the smart part, as far as, you know, him being able to get that money, you know. So it might make sense to wait it out a year till, you know, kind of the cap situation probably loosens up a little bit more next year. You know, go back, have another good year with the Celtics, and then try and get, you know, that bigger contract the following year, and I think that would work out best for all the parties involved.
Sweet.
Good stuff. Pretty much all.
Right. So where can everyone find you on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me. I'm at Sam Sheehan, just my first and my last name, Sheehan, on Twitter. You can check me out on Celtics blog. I'm getting ready to write a piece on Kyrie Irving here coming up. And if you could check us out on CLNS Roundtable. You follow our Twitter feed there, Celtics Roundtable, to sort of follow our podcast.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I'll catch you later on.
Yeah, definitely. Perfect. Appreciate you coming on.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me, guys. I had a blast.
You're welcome. Take it easy.
Take it easy.
Good stuff.
Yeah, pretty informative.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so if you guys, anyone who's listening, if you're not following Sam, definitely go follow him. He's a good follow. Right. Colin as well.
Definitely. So you want to wrap this up?
Yeah, we'll wrap it up. So as always, you can find us iTunes, Google Play, Anchor.fm. Check out our new website, www.diehardbostonsportsfans.com. We're going to start a blog on it. Also, there's a merch store on there already as well. So check it out. Give us some feedback. And again, tomorrow, you can find us on 12-ounce sports radio and full press radio. So follow those guys as well on Twitter. Go check out their websites, that kind of good stuff. Find us on Twitter, Die Hard Boss Fans. We play for titles. What's yours, Chris?
Mine has actually changed over the weekend. I used to be Chris the Hood for 20, but I'm now my actual name, Chris, capital C-H-R-I-S, underscore, Blackie, capital B-L-A-C-K-E-Y. And be sure to check out on our website. We have a new system set up with the FanDuel. If you're into that type of thing, you can go on there and give it a shot and see what happens.
Definitely. Yeah, that FanDuel thing just went up tonight. Also, right. Facebook, search for Die Hard Boston Sports Fans. We got a group and a page. And we just started a Facebook page for the podcast. It's Steve in the Hood Presents Boston Sports. So go check that out. We'll be posting the new podcast episodes and give it a like while you're there. Share it. Definitely appreciate it. Well, thanks in advance for listening. Have a good one.
See ya.